Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, May 2nd. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, California Faculty Association claims treatment like criminals on Cal Poly campus. Professor initiates hunger strike in solidarity with students. And the razor clam fishery shut down due to elevated domoic acid levels. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Moderate to heavy rain is on the way, slated to begin Friday evening and continuing through Saturday. For more, we spoke with Tyler Jewell, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka.
Looking over the next few days, we've got a cold front that's going to be moving through Friday night and Saturday morning. It looks like it's going to bring a pretty unseasonably large amount of rainfall over Humboldt County. Just a lot more than we'd usually expect for May. So right now we're forecasting around 1 to 2 inches, maybe some higher amounts up to maybe 3 to even 4 inches in the southern mountains of Del Norte, but down around that interior Humboldt, we're looking more in that 2 to 3 inch range. And that is primarily expected to fall late Friday night and early Saturday morning.
Snow will also be possible in the higher mountainous regions.
Snow levels with this look like they're going to fall pretty rapidly on Saturday morning, so we might get some flakes of snow down to maybe 3,000 feet in those interior mountains early Saturday morning. This looks like it'll be after most of the precip has come through, though, so we're not really expecting any impacts with that, but some of the mountains around, like Horse Mountain, and they might get some snow on early Saturday morning.
He explained that this amount of rainfall is an anomaly for this late in the season.
It's weird for this late in the season. This looks more like a system that we would see in the middle of winter than what we would see, in mid to late spring. So it's definitely interesting on that front.
Odd or not, he explained that this upcoming rain will be beneficial for local rivers.
I mean, we haven't had significant rain here in at least a few weeks, so it'll be, another solid pump of water across all of our watersheds. We're not expecting to see any real rises in the rivers, but it will at least bring water to the area. So, we'll see some flow increases across the region.
Despite the upcoming wet weather, burn permits are now required within the Humboldt, Del Norte, and Mendocino units of CAL FIRE. For more on that, we spoke with Battalion Chief Jeremy Ward.
So every year on May 1st in this area, CAL FIRE requires that you obtain a burn permit before you burn any vegetative debris. The North Coast Unified Air Quality Management District, they always require a permit any time of the year that you're going to burn that vegetation. But again, every year, beginning May 1st, CAL FIRE, Humboldt Del Norte unit, always requires a permit.
Burn permits must now be obtained online at burnpermit.fire.ca.gov. Applicants can access the website to obtain a burn permit, which involves watching a short educational video and submitting the application. The process provides the necessary information needed to conduct the burn safely, while minimizing the chance of fire escape. Permits are valid beginning May 1st of each year and require annual renewal. They are also issued free of charge.
Just so folks know, there are several different types of permits that they can apply for with CAL FIRE. Those are all on the website. And just so folks know that if they're going for the residential or LE62A permit, those permits don't go through a review process and are generally approved almost immediately. For other permits, the LE7s and LE5s, those are for larger projects, burning large piles, multiple piles, and broadcast burning. Those permits go through a review process. We do ask that the public give us about 10 days to process those requests, those applications, Some of those applications may require a site visit to determine what safety considerations need to be taken before we can issue the permit.
To be in line with the permit, burns must always have a minimum 10-foot clearance down to bare mineral soil around all burn piles and have a shovel and a water source available, with an adult present at all times.
In my experience, where we have escaped debris fires, those fires are all resulting from people who have not abided by the terms of those permits. Typically, it's because they haven't stayed in attendance, or they've been burning when it's windy, and very commonly is people don't clear around their piles. So that's kind of the biggest reason. There are a number of other reasons we want people to have the permits. But one of them is notifying the dispatch center before you burn. That way, when there are calls, maybe from a neighbor or a passerby who doesn't understand where that smoke is coming from, that our dispatch center knows what is going on and can expect that, hey, we do know that there's a control burn going on at this location. And that hopefully prevents us from having to send a full wildland dispatch with all sorts of equipment and potentially aircraft out to something that we should already know about. And, maybe we might just be able to send an engine to just ensure that it is a safe control burn and it's not something else.
Battalion Chief Ward explained that failure to follow these precautions may result in citations and fines.
There is some, potentially some accountability that's related to that. The landowners could face civil or criminal penalties for not burning safely and properly. But you can also be fined for not having a permit. So, again, these are pretty easy fixes that we can do, that the public can do to help keep them safe, keep their neighbors safe, and to help reduce the number of wildland fires.
Again, burn permits must now be obtained online at burnpermit.fire.ca.gov. For further information regarding residential burning or other fire safety tips, you can visit readyforwildfire.org. You can also download the Ready for Wildfire app on your device. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has announced the closure of the razor clam fishery in Humboldt County, citing a significant threat for domoic acid exposure. For more, we spoke with a CDFW Marine Region scientist.
My name is Christy Uhas. I am a senior environmental scientist specialist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. One of the duties I have is to work with our state health agencies looking at domoic acid, but could be other biotoxins that are created by HABs, harmful algal blooms, from naturally occurring algae that's found in the marine environment.
Domoic acid is a familiar foe to the North Coast and has closed other fisheries in years past.
Yeah, domoic acid has been sort of an issue with our recreational razor clam fishery in Northern California, especially since its long-term closure from 2016 to 2021. And just since that time, we've been monitoring clams and consistently opening and closing the fishery due to elevated levels of domoic acid. These are federal action levels set by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. It's a group of diatoms that are known to produce domoic acid. Their presence alone doesn't necessarily mean domoic acid is in the system. However, we also saw a long-term seasonal closure in the Dungeness crab fishery as well because of a 2015-16 event that occurred and shut down that fishery for 4 to 5 months. And that fishery was declared a federal fishery disaster from that closure.
Pseudonychia, otherwise known as domoic acid, is a naturally occurring single-celled marine algae, and it poses significant health risks if consumed. Razor clams are known to bioaccumulate domoic acid, meaning it may not clear their system long after the ocean conditions that have caused it have been abated.
Typically, it will, even though an event, a bloom has happened, it, may not be detected in clams, continue to be detected in clams tissue, as after that bloom has passed. It's a neurotoxin that affects higher organisms, humans especially. It turns into more like a nausea or stomach flu type symptom, but unfortunately in higher concentrations, it can cause more neurological issues, either like seizures, coma, death. Yeah, these are the things that we really are trying to, you know, keep out of the food system for humans. That's the concern with this particular biotoxin, this particular algae that produces it.
Since November of 2023, the razor clam recreational fishery has been closed in Del Norte County. And today, that closure has been extended to Humboldt.
It definitely likes the conditions of our coast. Obviously, there are nutrients in the water that make it proliferate. I think there's some balance of ocean temperatures. Sometimes when it just warms up quite a bit, it maybe makes them proliferate again. Their presence alone doesn't necessarily mean domoic acid is present. Something will trigger them to produce the toxin. And then that'll enter the food web because it's taken up by clams and mussels that are filter feeders, and then higher organisms will start to eat that, and then it, you know, moves up the food chain that way, the marine food web, just from the filter feeders that take it up.
We asked when they expect conditions to improve.
We need for them to, for health agencies to recommend opening the fishery to our Fish and Wildlife Director. We need two sets of clean tests that are taken at least a week apart, and that means all clams are found to be below the federal action limit for domoic acid.
For the latest consumption warnings, you can call the California Department of Health's Biotoxin Information Line. That number is 510-412-4643. And to get the latest information on current fishing season closures related to domoic acid, you can call CDFW's Domoic Acid Fishery Closure Information Line. That number is 831-649-2883. That information and more can also be found at wildlife.ca.gov. The Cal Poly Humboldt campus remains closed following Tuesday's police raid on the pro-Palestinian Solidarity encampment that had occupied the university for just over a week. A significant law enforcement presence continues on campus. As previously reported, 32 individuals were arrested, including 13 students and one faculty member. All have since been released. The university's public relations office stated that law and order has been restored to the campus. However, the strict closure will remain in effect until May 10th, requiring faculty and students to have escorts while on campus. The local chapter of the California Faculty Association has been extremely critical of the administration's response. Last week, they passed a vote of no confidence in Cal Poly Humboldt President Tom Jackson. And earlier this week, they issued a statement supporting the arrested students and presented their own series of demands, including removing the barriers to campus access. For more details, we spoke with Aaron Donaldson, a communications lecturer at Cal Poly Humboldt and the secretary of the CFA.
Yeah, so we had a meeting this morning where we invited the faculty to come and just check in with us and tell us where they are, how they're feeling, what do they need, how they've weathered the storm, so to speak. We got an email this morning from the university. It was signed by President Jackson, Provost Capps, the Vice President for Administrative Affairs. And this email is basically trying to put this all behind us. It's saying that we have to come to terms with the recent events on campus. And it's saying that we have to recognize the emotional impact that it's taken on all of us. And generally, the takeaway from our meeting with the faculty this morning is that we feel like we're being talked to and not with. They are basically telling us that things are like that order has been restored on campus, but none of us can access campus, and they won't give us a clear date as to why. And not just Siemens Hall. We're talking about the entire Cal Poly Humboldt campus has been on a hard closure. And we have had faculty who have been trying to get on campus and meeting with just extended delays. These are people that have research that they're trying to complete on a deadline. These are graduate students that have research they have to complete in order to finish their degrees. We also have people who have gotten like lanyards so that they could go on campus because they have very specific roles, and I'll be kind of vague in order to protect their anonymity. But even with those lanyards, they have been confronted by campus security and by police. It's like the entire campus has been turned into a crime scene.
The campus has also issued an alert to local media, stating that they need authorization before gaining access to the campus. Freelance journalist and Cal Poly alum John Harper criticized this as illegal. Donaldson explained that faculty who have worked on the campus for years are being treated like criminals.
So we have been told that we can email the IT department and set an appointment. And when we send that email, we have to send our phone number. We have to say the time that we want to be there. We have to tell them what our office number is. And then they are supposed to get back to us. And I have an appointment tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning where I have to meet at the parking kiosk so that I can have an escort that will take me up to Founders Hall, which is quite a ways away from everything that was happening. And apparently they're going to stand there. They're supposed to be with me the whole time that I'm on campus. They won't leave me alone. I've worked on this campus for almost a decade now, and this is the first time I've ever had to be under escort. They won't tell us why. We are literally left scrambling for rumors to figure out why the entire campus has been locked down. We have heard someone say that someone told them that they are just following the orders of the police, that they are trying to secure their insurance claim. None of this explains why the media can't go. That is very alarming for us that we cannot, you know, when we have archivists, campus archivists who wanted to like archive what happened and what took place, and they've obviously taken everything down, thrown everything away. There's a huge divide. I feel like I've been saying it on the KMOD airwaves a lot lately. There's a huge divide between, in particular, the president's office and the rest of the faculty. It is shocking to us that the chair of the Faculty Rights Committee for the union has only just now met with administration. Like today was the first time they have met.
KMOD News has requested multiple interviews and comments from Cal Poly Humboldt Public Information Specialists. Despite being told that if we submit our questions in advance, they would be answered in a pre-recorded message, this has yet to occur. Nevertheless, KMOD News has applied for a special press pass to access the campus following Tuesday night's raid. We will continue to share updates. And we asked Donaldson, what comes next?
We're really unsure, and I think that uncertainty is leading to a lot of frustration. And one of the things that has become very clear to us is that they're kind of just making this up as they go. They didn't have any policy for what happens when they have to, you know, when they decide to lock down the entire campus because of a nonviolent protest. There's no policy for that. They threatened like 70 students with suspension just by using their Wi-Fi location, which is not allowed in the court, but is allowed for a campus university. But they've been capturing students who like showed up to just for the teach-in. That was like the only reason they went, was just for the teach-in, or they were going across campus to get groceries. Like, they're literally making things up as they go, and the rest of us are just sitting here waiting for fake emails that show up in the morning. And on the one hand, try to say that they support us and that they encourage us in this difficult time to deal with what's going on. But on the other hand, offer absolutely zero information and come with zero collaboration. That's really the key. As a communication professor, there's a big difference between talking to someone or at someone and talking with someone. And there's no back and forth here at all, which makes it impossible for us to plan anything. Well, the public needs to know that the Cal Poly Humboldt has basically been turned into a crime scene. And that the faculty can't get on campus without being escorted, the media cannot get on campus at all, and there is absolutely zero justification for this. And that should be really, really alarming. We're worried about our students. We're worried about our colleagues. We are burnt out. We are trying to get to the end of finals. And it is really alarming how quickly they pivoted to, like, criminalizing the faculty, cutting everyone out of the equation. If there's something that the public needs to know, it's that the current administration at Cal Poly Humboldt is just willing to go on lockdown.
Earlier this afternoon, the Cal Poly Humboldt assistant professor that was arrested Tuesday morning spoke to the media this afternoon about his recent hunger strike in support of students. He now faces suspension from the university and a potential deportation to Iran, as reported by Serenity Wood.
Dr. Ruhala Aga Sella, Ph.D., an assistant professor in the School of Education at Cal Poly Humboldt, spoke with the press earlier today after being released from jail following the pro-Palestine protests at Cal Poly Humboldt earlier this week. He chose to reject any bond and embark on a hunger strike, stating, quote, "I refuse to accept the label of criminal for standing up for an ethical reason. Our arrest on a stolen land and in a place that we consider home is an act of violence. Until all my students and me are released and justice is served, I will endure this hunger strike." From Iran on a work visa, Aga Sella has been threatened with deportation by CPH in retaliation for his activism. His main motivation, as Aga Sella stated in his interview, was to support the students at Cal Poly Humboldt. He states that the reaction from the administration was too forceful.
I think in terms of being a small campus, I think the reaction from the admin and from law enforcement was too forceful. I was trying to make sure the students are being safe and their voice is being heard in a way that it's meant. I went to campus Monday evening when I heard there is a protest and protesters are occupying a building. So I showed up and I stayed till around midnight until the police had left. On Wednesday, I went there with my sleeping bag and my tent to stay. And I stayed throughout the events. Like I said, Friday evening, I left campus to visit my children. After I heard the hard closure on Saturday noon, I left my other commitments at Humboldt Math Festival and then just rushed to campus back again. My hunger strike started at the time of arrest, which was Tuesday, 2 a.m. It ended yesterday, which was Wednesday at 6 p.m. I invited the students and colleagues to a Chinese buffet in the town, and we just had a social together and we ate. Yeah. And they were so generous and kind to me. They brought flowers and gifts.
Did you say that there are charges being pressed against you?
Yes. Yeah. June 6th, 8:30 is the hearing for us. So we will be at the courthouse in Eureka for a hearing.
And what are the charges?
So people have different charges. Some of them are trespassing, property damage. Mine, I believe, is being present in a crime scene after they asked me to leave. So we were handcuffed with zip ties from the back. They, for my arrest, they cut my backpack with scissors because they couldn't take my backpack off of my back as my hands was tied. We were all then transferred to the custody of Humboldt Sheriff and the Sacramento force left campus. I would say most of them did not have body cameras, or their body cameras were not on. We requested them to turn their body cameras on, but they refused. And I didn't leave the jail until I made sure students are all being released. Came to this country 12 years ago as a refugee. I was under persecution in my country for human rights and women rights activism.
Dr. Ruhala, something we saw from administration were the concerns about hate speech, specifically anti-Semitism. We're seeing a new article in the Mad River Union with multiple members of the Jewish community explaining how they don't feel safe because of even the terms as from the river to the sea has become is considered controversial. Can you comment on this, the safety of our Jewish community members, and if you believe there were dangerous hate speech involved?
I understand those sentiments. I I really do. I have spoken to some of them. There were Jewish students who were leading this movement. There was a Passover celebration ceremony on the Quad. You can find the documentation of that. Some of them were fasting as observation of Jewish holidays. I don't think every Jewish person has that fear or that sentiment, but I understand there are some who don't feel safe. I understand there are those who think from the river to the sea is anti-Semitic, is inappropriate. I think these are issues to be discussed, to be debated. I encourage everybody to do their research, to read more. One person emailed me and called me a terrorist. I responded softly and graciously, and I invited them to do research, and I also invited them to have conversation. I appreciate them for speaking up their truth. I appreciated them for voicing their opinion. I think that is important. This is something that I always encourage my students to do. I think polarization is more dangerous than any other ideology. I think we need to keep the conversation. We cannot dismiss one another. We need to listen to each other. We need to have dialogues. We need to have conversation.
So, teaching your classes?
My access to my classes are interrupted. I'm not supposed to contact any students. My department has taken over my courses and also my advisement for the students who have thesis and projects with me.
If the students were going to do something similar like this again, do you think you would do this again? Do you think you would be willing to get arrested again for this?
Well, this is not, you know, there is no formula for these events. I think every project is unique. Every project should specifically be thought through. I don't think I can answer, or even if I answer, I don't think that's an honest answer to that. So it all depends on how students are thinking and organizing that project and how the university and law enforcement is responding. If I feel I'm needed there, I will be there.
Since the protests have started, like, how much has your job changed?
During the time of the protest?
Yeah.
Well, when the campus closed, we had to do virtual classes. I did one class on Tuesday evening from home, and my Monday morning class, I did it from the Quad on my phone. I gave them a tour of the Quad and what was going on so that they can see the signs and graffiti and everything, as my commitment to place-based learning. This is important for my students to be engaged and reflect on these events. I teach bilingual education. Many of our multilingual learners come from, they are refugees of war. They have experienced unrest. They have experienced crisis. They have experienced being in conflicts. I think it's important to be globally aware if we want to serve that population well. And that was why I was showing them these events. Some of them were in the protest. Some of them were not. But I remain committed to my roles and my duty as a teacher. I love my job. I love my students. I love what I'm doing. And I think this was part of my job to be there for my students.
That was Dr. Ruhala Agasela, PhD and assistant professor in the School of Education at Cal Poly Humboldt, speaking about his recent arrest and hunger strike in support of his students. For KMUD, I'm Serenity Wood.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, D-Dog. And thanks to our reporter, Serenity Wood. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.